It's time for a story told on KMUN. Your host, Michael McCusker, has been a regular voice on KMUN's airwaves since the 1980s. Each week, he shares commentary and writings about the current state of just about everything. This week, Michael commemorates the start of the Korean War, which began on this day in 1950, 76 years ago. He also recalls memories from his days as a U.S. Marine in Vietnam, almost 60 years ago.
Good morning. My name is Michael McCusker. Today is 6/25/26. It is the anniversary of the start of the Korean War, which was a Sunday, a day of rest and religion for a significant portion of Earth's human population. Suddenly, on the early morning of June 25th, 1950, the army of Communist North Korea invaded South Korea, and the world has never been the same since. And this is from the first and last paragraphs of Bevan Alexander's 1986 Korea, the first war we lost. The attack made real the fear of direct communist aggression against the West, raised in the Russian blockade of Berlin 2 years before. It appeared to validate the existence of a worldwide communist conspiracy of conquest. This specter of a far-reaching plot, actual or not, ensured that the McCarthy era witch hunt for red agents and sympathizers would be supported by many. The panic precipitated Europe to subdue its fear of the German army and allow West Germany to rearm as a Western ally. American response to the attack crystallized the practice of confrontation diplomacy with the communist world in the Truman and Eisenhower administrations. And that affected American policy all the way through the Vietnam War years. Korea motivated the American people to undergo a weeks-long examination in Senate committee hearings of what the country should do about war and communism. Yet by the end of the Korean War, it had become manifest to many Americans, though by no means all, that the simple verities about total victory and the conflict between good and evil that had guided American policy for many years were inadequate in the dismaying world that arose from World War II. The United States suffered 139,272 casualties in the entire war, not counting frostbite cases and other injuries. Of these, 24,965 were killed, 101,368 wounded, and 12,939 were missing and presumed dead. South Korea suffered 272,975 losses, 46,812 killed, 159,727 wounded, and 66,436 missing and presumed dead. Other UN nations lost 14,100 men, 2,597 killed, 9,581 wounded, and 1,925 missing. On the communist side, Joint Chiefs of Staff estimates, Korean highlights, 27 July 1953 in U.S. National Archives, were that the North Koreans suffered 620,264 casualties, 214,899 killed, 300,685 wounded, and 101,680 missing. the Chinese sustained 909,607 casualties, 4,001 killed, 486,995 wounded, and 21,211 missing. Total battle casualties on both sides, therefore, were 1,956,000, give or take a few. More than 2 million civilians in North and South Korea were killed or injured. In addition, much of South Korea and practically all of North Korea were shattered. It would take many years to repair the damage. Perhaps leaders on both sides should have read and heeded the great Sun Tzu, the Chinese historian, who wrote in The Art of War in 500 BC, quote, "In all history, there is no instance of a country having benefited from prolonged warfare," quote, unquote. My friend Ed Niska, who died in the late 1980s and was a prominent Astoria fisherman, was in Seoul, South Korea on Invasion Day, a member of an American fishing commission meeting with a Korean counterpart. Suddenly, he was drafted into helping remove or destroy U.S. equipment and documents to keep them out of North Korean hands, which he spent doing in almost panicked haste with American embassy people and U.S. Army intelligence spooks the next few days before Seoul was abandoned. If I remember what he told me, Ed and the other American fisher people were flown out of Seoul and repatriated back to the States directly afterward. And from Robert J. Lifton for the New York Times Book Review, 7 April, 1968. It is easy these days, this century, to defend the idea that something ails man. His extraordinary impulse to make war upon his own species in the name of his sanctified idols has reached grotesque proportions, nor does he seem to be improving. To the contrary, consider an up-to-the-minute example of something approaching collective madness. The most powerful nation in the world intervenes in the civil war, following upon an anti-colonial one, in a small, faraway country, and saturates that country with its destructive firepower and indiscriminate killing, is profoundly resented by virtually all factions there, as well as by the rest of the world, and finds itself stymied, both politically and militarily. It stations 5,000 men at a small outpost in an exposed valley, surrounded by hostile forces of many times that number, and insists, against prevailing objective military judgment, that the outpost can be defended. And to buttress that assumption, considers escalating the war still further, and even the use of tactical versions of humanity's ultimate weapons, though such measures could well result in a general holocaust in which most or all of humanity would be annihilated. Yes, something ails human beings, but what is it? And that was Robert J. Lifton for the New York Times Book Review, 7 April, 1968. And from Jonathan Schell. We felt once again that the war was sitting like a roadblock in the life of the country. The years roll by, but we Americans are not permitted to change. The repetition of horror deadens our spirit. Our hearts ache to move on to new things, but the war holds us in the role it has cast us. We grow old holding placards in demonstrations, denouncing over and over again a grotesque war that we must now recognize as the most enduring institution to have emerged from the rapid flux of American life at mid-century, quote, unquote, by Jonathan Schell from Talk of the Town, New Yorker Magazine, 8 May, 1971. And he was speaking about the 24 anti-war demonstrations in Washington, D.C. I have been back from Vietnam 59 years. Some things I remember so vividly, yet not entirely in context. Three Marines shot, trying to replace each other on a field radio. A mountain valley in which a single sniper killed six of us with headshots. We had to carry them out of the valley to someplace to medevac helicopters could airlift their bodies back to Chu Lai, where our base was. Jumping out of helicopters in jungled or rice field landing zones, some hot, others cold. But all of my memories are out of sync of when or where, or most of my memories at least. Yet over the starkly remembered ones are some which are missing when or where, but just our images. Crossing a stream under fire, reaching an opposite shore with a new in-country major who said, when you hear the bullets, they are already past. And I said, they had a lot of brothers and sisters behind them and he should keep his head down. Running from MPs who chased us out of off-limit villages where we were caught drinking beer and flirting with the Vietnamese girls. So many times flopping into wet or dry paddies when snipers shot at us. Countless times in as many places and situations in which snipers shot at patrols, sweeps, and of course, during search and destroy operations. And the time my frightened commanding officer, who was new to the country, took my helmet when we were mortared, which flashed across my mind when I saw photographs of Trump putting on a hard hat. This is Michael McCusker. Joanne Rideout is engineer of this program. Impeachment for Donald Trump is the least punishment that insufferable, egotistical, Neronic farce of an American president who daily disgraces democracy for his own virtually Hitleresque concept of Yankee Doodle democracy. He should be impeached for raping E. Jean Carroll, a magazine writer, back in the last decade of the 20th century, and be brought to trial for the sexual abuse allegations by at least two dozen women. Instead, he has launched a federal jihad against her through the Justice Department, as well as attempting to prosecute her and the other women, which is also a Nazi-like pogrom against anyone whom he has sued, embarrassed, and otherwise embarrassed him publicly. Donald Trump is not simply a grotesque caricature of venal imperialism, as well as male chauvinist hoggery. He is its grotesque face and America's nightmare. Since I was a kid, I have wished I had been born to be a part of the American Revolution. I hardly envisioned that I would indeed be present at the end of American democracy. Yet, all things considered, there might well be the beginning of a new American Revolution devoted to preserve true democracy. I wish to be a part of it, however large or small my contribution. I end this program with a quote from the nearly forgotten Philip Wiley, who was briefly quite controversial in the early 1960s. He was an American writer, one whom I consider a very great writer. Quote, "The sum total of human works does not in all parts put together equal the achievements of the life forms of plant and insect in a square foot of grass," quote, unquote. And from the great Utah Phillips, quoting a friend. No matter how new age you are, old age is going to get your ass, quote unquote.
You've been listening to A Story Told on KMUN, featuring Michael McCusker, journalist, activist, former firefighter, and Vietnam veteran. Michael has been sharing essays and poetry on A Story Told since 1987. For 30 years, he published the North Coast Times-Eagle newspaper out of his home in Astoria, Oregon. Michael currently shares his work and the works of other authors from his home on the Central Oregon coast. Join us here next week for A Story Told.